welcome to the Diz Dads Podcast, a midweek destinations and diversions show. It's the Dad Show, your hump day Disney vacation fix for Wednesday, May 31st, 2017. The Dad Show is brought to you by Kingdom Strollers. Kingdom Strollers is Orlando's premium stroller and crib rental vendor. Why pay more for a less comfortable, less versatile stroller in the theme parks? Make your reservation at kingdomstrollers.com. You'll pay less for the rental, and they'll deliver the stroller of your choice to your resort and pick it up from the resort at the end of your vacation for free. Kingdom Strollers, your first choice for Orlando stroller rentals and an authorized Walt Disney World stroller vendor. Today, I'm talking with Nathan Trent about his father-son trip to Walt Disney World for the opening of Pandora, the world of Avatar. Welcome back to the show, Nate.
Hello, humans.
This was one of those trips that is one of those extra ones, right? That you know, whether it's the blessing or the curse, one or the other of the annual pass, right?
Yes, it was the curse of the annual pass. annual pass preview registration in for Pandora, which I wasn't sure I was going to take, and I was about ready to let it lapse, and my eldest son decided he just graduated with his master's that he really wanted to go to Disney World to celebrate that. So,
okay,
kind of so bit the bullet. Yeah.
Yeah, so this morphed pretty quickly into father-son trip instead of just, you know, Nate, who could do it super cheap because you already had your tickets.
That's right.
All right. So this trip came together fairly quickly because you didn't really plan on taking it until the, you know, annual pass holder previews of Pandora were announced. So how far in advance, really, did you start planning the trip?
Let's see. I would say it was less than a month, really.
Wow. Okay. So really,
I made the reservation for late in the day in case I had on the off chance I could make it down there by myself, and then, like I said, once my son graduated, about a week or so before his graduation, which was the 1st of May. I think it was May 6th or something, about maybe a week and a half before that, he finally started pressing me that he wanted to go, and he wanted me to go to the Pandora thing in hopes that he might be able to sneak in too, but.
Okay.
So I would say maybe, you know, just a little under a month of actual planning.
All right. So it came together pretty quickly, and your focus obviously was that you had this, you know, annual pass holder preview for Pandora, but you were there for more than just the one day. So what was the overall plan once you and your son kind of were putting your heads together and making a whole trip out of this instead of, you know, Nate doing a dash to Pandora?
We both were really excited to see the new fireworks show at the Magic Kingdom.
Okay.
We actually booked a dessert party for that on our arrival day.
Ah, very nice.
Yeah.
So let's go ahead then. And this was a fairly short trip, right? How many park days?
Three full days and like two half days.
Okay. So 5 days total with arrival and departure days, basically.
That's right.
Okay. And where did you end up staying?
We stayed at All Star Sports. Because of the annual pass holder preview, the rooms were actually pretty scarce. I had to do a split stay at the same resort, but we were fortunate that guy assigning rooms noticed that, and we were able to stay in the same room the whole trip. So that was cool.
Yeah, they're pretty good about that. Just for future reference for anybody else who's in that situation where you find yourself having to book two separate reservations in the same resort, if you make sure that the first half of the reservation and the second half of the reservation are linked as a continuing reservation, the room assigners will do everything they can to make it so you don't have to change rooms. Just a tip.
Yeah.
All right. So you're at All-Star
Sports.
Sorry. So you're at All-Star Sports and you've got a few park days. So your arrival, I assume you drove this trip.
We actually flew into Sanford.
Oh, okay. Well, so this is new too. Had you flown into Sanford before?
Yeah, the DizDad's trip, we flew into Sanford.
Okay. So this is the second time. What's your sense of that? Is it still something that's worthwhile or, only if the fare is really much lower?
Yeah. The fare is the only economical way for us to, make it worth flying would be flying into Sanford. Just for a single person, it's even pushing it.
Yeah.
Versus the cost of driving versus the cost of flying.
Yeah. You're kind of on the edge of easily drivable solo. I mean,
yeah, it's about 10 hours.
Yeah. So it's driving. Doable, but it does make that first day a little rough.
Yeah. Of course, you have to rent a car in the Sanford. There's no Magical Express.
Right.
And I would like to mention something here is I tried a new toll paying service. It's a little app called Paytolo.
Yes. I was wondering about that. So how did that go?
So, basically you sign up through the app and you create an account and you put a little money in the account. I put in $20 and I had a $5 credit they gave me for signing up. And where Sanford's located and Disney World, there is one toll road, 417. It's about an hour drive and about $8 in tolls one way.
Okay, so it's not insignificant, but it's one of those things where I guess theoretically you could avoid 417 coming from Sanford, but you'd have to go way out of your way and it would make it a much longer trip.
You can drive, but right now there is so much construction on I-4.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to do
it. Through Orlando proper, you don't want to do that.
Yeah.
That's the last time DizDad's convention, we did drive I-4 and we didn't have any troubles, but the construction has gotten much worse since then. Yeah. And I was listening to a couple other people talking about what a nightmare I-4 was right now. So I wanted to avoid that. That's why I signed up for the Paytolo app. And
all right.
So far, it's worked pretty good.
Yeah. So you signed up for Paytolo, put about $20 in. They gave you a $5 credit. You've got $25 of Paytolo. And do you get a transponder or something? How does that work?
You activate the app on your phone. And it basically uses the GPS tracking on your phone as you're driving. And before you do that, once you get your rental car, you take a picture of your license tag, log that car in the Paytolo app as a temporary car. You put an end date. So the next person that rents that car
isn't drawing from your account.
That's right. So those are some important things, but it seemed to work pretty good. I mean, about 0.2 of a mile after you've passed the toll, you hear the little app make a little sound like coins going into a basket sound. And it knows you've passed that toll. And when you reach the end of your journey one direction, you can go through and kind of multi-select all the tolls you went through and pay them all at once.
Interesting. Yeah. Right. And
pretty slick app. I liked it.
Right. And you've been home now for a couple of weeks, right?
Almost. About a week. Yeah.
Okay. And you haven't been contacted about any, tickets or anything. So as far as you can tell, it worked.
Yeah. All yes. Right. And currently, if anybody else wants to try this, a lot of the car rental agencies seem pretty ignorant that this app exists, and they're pretty insistent that you buy their toll package, but you want to refuse the car company's toll package.
Right. And the car company's toll packages can get pretty pricey in a hurry. I mean, some of them are better than others, but you got to look at them real carefully because, you know, they pitch them to try to make them sound affordable, but they conveniently often, you know, either mumble or leave off the, you know, per day piece of the what they charge you. Some of them charge a daily charge on the rental of their transponder.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, enough ranting about tolls. Paytola worked well.
I just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you did because I'm actually going to want to talk to you a little bit more when we're done recording about this system because I think that's probably what we're going to want to use because we'll have a rental car for the first time in a while on a trip, this trip that we've got coming up because we're not staying at Disney. So no Magical Express. All right, so Paytola system worked well. You flew into Sanford. You drove to your resort. You had an arrival day that was a shortened day. So what was the agenda for your shortened arrival day?
First thing on the agenda was we wanted to get something to eat at the food booth at Flower and Garden.
Okay. So you're heading over to Epcot.
Went over to Epcot. Checked out a few of the food booths just right there at the World Showcase Plaza area. I got at the Pineapple Promenade, I got a spicy hot dog. It was pretty good. And my son went to someplace, a Caribbean booth, and got a Jamaican beef that was really good. And we both ended up going and getting a second helping of that.
So the Caribbean beef was certainly the favorite as compared to the compared to which one did you have initially?
It was a spicy hot dog from
the spicy hot dog. Okay. Now I'm surprised you didn't remember from our last trip that, you know, when we were there for Flower and Garden together, that the real prize of Flower and Garden is over at Florida Fresh.
That's right. It was for the arrival day. It was just too far to walk over to there. It was located over between Morocco and France, I think.
Oh wow! So they did push it pretty far back because I seem to remember it being a little closer last time.
Yeah. So I did have my shrimp and grits later on in the trip, but and it's probably still my favorite, but I didn't have it this day.
Okay. Well, fair enough. So why don't we talk a little bit more about Epcot in general on this trip? What were some other things about Epcot, whether it be attraction-wise or food and garden or flower and garden, whichever it's going to be-wise, that stood out to you one way or the other, good or bad?
Well, during Flower and Garden, Food and Garden, whatever you call it, it's always very, very pretty to walk around Epcot during this time. I mean, even more so than other times of the year. Everything's just so pretty with all the flowers.
Sure.
I mean, it's a great time to visit Epcot.
Well, and it sounds like you spent some time there, you know, obviously on more than one day, even though your primary reasons for being there on this trip were to be in the Magic Kingdom and Animal Kingdom.
Yeah. You know, we did Soarin', we did Test Track. We did not bother with anything else. Being a Siemens employee, I went into the Siemens lounge there and then we rode Spaceship Earth a couple of times this trip, but outside of that, it's mostly just walking around, looking at flowers, and eating at food booths.
Cool. Now, did you spend really much of any time on attractions at Epcot, or had you kind of been there, done that, and that's not what you were there for?
It was kind of been there, done that. We did Soarin' twice and Test Track twice.
Okay. Did you get any better view of Soren? I know last time we talked about it, you were disappointed in the skewing at the edges.
We were in the center this time, both rides, so that worked out well.
Okay, so it was a better experience for you, though.
Yes.
All right. So that's Epcot, and maybe best now to move on to talk about one of the reasons that you really took this trip in the first place, and that is Happily Ever After, the debut of a new fireworks show, and you did it upright. I think it was a smart move because you were there. I think it was the premiere night, wasn't it?
I think it had been running a couple of days
before we premiere got there, week, so. At least.
Yeah.
And as often is the case with a brand new attraction of any kind, you know, there's a lot of attention to it. It does draw a crowd. So you made the dessert party reservation. First of all, describe for us the location where the Happily Ever After dessert party takes place.
It happens over in the Tomorrowland Terrace. The dessert party I got was a dessert party with viewing from the, what is the name of the restaurant? The Plaza Garden View.
Okay.
There is, it used to be a fast pass area for fireworks and stuff, but I think they've pretty much decided, hey, we can sell this for a dessert party viewing and make money on it. So.
Okay. Well, and some of it is access too, right? Because they're making it's for a dessert party. And so it needs to have fairly ready access to a kitchen. So I think it helps them that you have this, you know, area that's got a place to have a nice sort of set aside viewing area, but it's also got a restaurant kitchen pretty close by.
Yes. So they kind of had the section, the Tomorrowland Terrace sectioned off. There was the lower section to the left as you're walking from Main Street over to Tomorrowland Terrace. That was for the people who had the viewing from Tomorrowland Terrace.
Okay.
That lower section there.
Right.
And then the upper sections were for people who had the Plaza View.
Okay. And as I recall, there's a bit of a price difference too, right?
Yeah, it was about $10 difference.
Okay.
As far as food offerings, it looked like they had a few more offerings for different types of juices, but it looked like they had the same desserts that we did.
Okay.
I could look down there and see what they had. It's just, we weren't allowed in there. So,
right. Were there any other differences besides some slight differences in food and then them being, you know, a little bit sort of, I guess, lower down, right? And closer?
Yeah, they were lower down and, you know, of course, I guess the goal is for them to sit there and watch the fireworks from that location where the sections I was in, we were about 8:30. We were allowed access to the area about 7:30 to 8:30. So you had an hour to eat all the yummy goodness that you could. And then they escort you down to, actually, you can take a little longer than that because the fireworks don't start till 9, but they start escorting people about 8:30 down to the Plaza Garden to pick out their spot.
So the one that you signed up for is, I guess it sounds like two differences. Number one, it sounds like it's done much like the Hollywood Studios Star Wars Galactic Spectacular Dessert Party is done now, where you've got your food service and desserts and things in one area, and then they lead you over to your viewing area. And then the second piece is obviously that when they bring you over to your viewing area, it's a standing room area. And as I recall, the folks in the Tomorrowland Terrace party have, you know, seats that they can watch from their seat. They can watch the fireworks.
That's correct.
So what did you think? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Just to me, apples to apples, I think the Plaza Garden viewing has a better view of this show than you would from Tomorrowland Terrace. You
That's have exactly a better view,
straight, straight on view of the castle.
Yeah.
Just a little off to the right, but pretty much straight on view to the castle with no obstructions because they keep the pathway in front of it clear. So
right.
Our view's not blocked.
Very nice. So what did you think of your dessert selection? Was it good stuff?
Yeah, it was pretty good stuff. I would have liked to have seen a few more savory options. They had basically had three different types of cheese for savory, and the rest of it was either fruits or sweet chocolate type desserts.
Right.
But overall, I mean, it was pretty good, and I would probably do it again. In fact, I think our last night we were both checking availability, and there was availability, but we opted not to.
But clearly you were tempted to pull that trigger again.
Yes, we were. We really enjoyed the show, and we liked having a little bit less claustrophobic view of the castle.
Sure. Well, talk a little bit about the show itself. I mean, what, you know, obviously you'd seen Wishes lots of times. I know that you enjoyed Wishes quite a bit. What was your take on the new show and how it compared to Wishes, just in your personal, you know, opinion?
You know, Wishes will always have a warm spot in my heart, but I really think they've done an excellent job on this show. I mean, the way they worked the fireworks in with various projection elements happening on the castle, it's a more complete show than Wishes was. To me, it tells a better story. Kind of hard to tell you what the story is. It's just,
well, no, that's all right. I mean, without
kind of the hero's journey type story, you know?
Sure.
Using various Disney characters. And, I've heard people say it seems like they emphasize projections more than fireworks. I think there's probably more fireworks, in my opinion. It just doesn't come across YouTube that way.
Well, yeah, I think that's a good point to make, because a lot of people, I think, you know, their initial impression is based on either, you know, video they've seen, and even the Disney Parks video of these kinds of shows. It's the complaint I used to have about Illuminations, right? And people's initial reaction to Illuminations. Now, I know you were never a huge Illuminations fan, but I think that Illuminations is an example of a show that gets cheated when you're only opinion of it is based on what you've seen of videos and photos, because it's a very broad show. It takes place across a really wide field of view, and it's a multiplanar show. There are things happening at different heights. And when you're doing video or still photography, all you can capture are pieces of it, you know, glimpses of it really. And it sounds like the same thing is true at Happily Ever After. And it's true. I think we've talked about this with Star Wars, A Galactic Spectacular as well, that, you know, these shows are much richer, but it makes it harder to capture them on video.
Yes. One thing I know, seeing the show live, that I didn't notice on videos is the use of lighting and lasers during that, and there's a few smaller elements happening on the castle that you don't really notice in the videos. There's just so much going on that you can catch it with your naked eye better than you can seeing it on a video.
Yeah.
For example, at the beginning of the show, there's a little one of the little, I guess you would call it the Wishes Arc firework, that kind of lands ends up landing at the top spire of the castle, and it makes a kind of disappears behind the castle, and then they project a little star, and then the slow part of the show starts with the Princess and the Frog singing, you know,
right, right.
It's pretty.
Yeah, but clearly like the key there is just what you were saying, that they've now integrated these projection elements into the story, and the projection elements and the fireworks work together as opposed to being two different things that happen to be happening at the same time.
Yeah. And there's other things, like there was an instance where Merida shoots an arrow. She's shooting it up, and it shoots a firework off the side of the castle.
Cool.
At the same angle our arrow goes, as you know, just little elements like that. And the use of lasers. different things, you know, like the big robot in The Incredibles is shooting lasers and blowing holes in the castle. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, that sounds like it. I'm looking forward to catching it eventually. Unfortunately, it may be a little while, but you know, I'm excited about the fact that I'm hearing consistently good reports from people who are you know, telling me what giving me what I feel like is an honest assessment.
I mean, I loved Wishes, and like this one a lot. probably love it. I mean, we went to go see it 3 times.
All right. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
There is no warning before the show starts. It just kind of starts, you know, where Wishes, you'd hear that little orchestra build up to it before it launches the first firework. Uh-huh. This show just kind of starts. It tells you that, you know, at the the 5 minutes, that type of warning. One of the nights we saw it, it was rain delayed. Okay. And it actually started raining. And we ran into the men's shop there in the Emporium right outside of Casey's. And we were sitting there in the corner. And all of a sudden we hear the music start playing. I'm like, well, they started a show. So it was one of those brief little Florida cloudbursts, though. You know, it was pouring rain when we went in, and it was not raining when we went out. So, but there was no warning. It was just that the show started.
Wow.
And our third night of the show was the night when the singers of the theme song were there performing live. So that was pretty cool.
Oh, that is cool.
So yeah, we noticed camera crews and everything set up. We knew something special was going on, but we didn't know that's what it was.
Right. So talk a little bit more about Magic Kingdom and anything else that stood out to you about Magic Kingdom on this trip. You know, any attraction issues or show or other food elements, anything that stood out in the Magic Kingdom?
We spent most of our time doing Space Mountain and Big Thunder Mountain.
Okay.
And Pirates of the Caribbean, stuff like that, Haunted Mansion. The inclement weather did hit one time while we had acquired some special fast passes that we could use anywhere, anytime. And we were ready to load on Seven Dwarfs Mine Train, and they shut it down.
Ooh. Yeah, man, we lost after you'd already braved the line.
Yeah. So we lost that special fast pass because they couldn't give it back to us. But that was the only incident as far as a Magic Kingdom attraction where we missed out on something because of rain.
Right, right. Yeah, and you know, that's one of those things about taking a trip that's you know, dad and an adult son, right, is that, you know, you get to pretty much do what you want to do, and you don't spend a lot of time on attractions that aren't your first choice attractions anyway.
Yeah. We made good use of fast passes. My son, again, was a champ. Once we burned through our third fast pass, he was on there getting us, hey, I got us another one at Big Thunder in about 5 minutes. I'm like, okay.
Well, yeah, and there you go, right? I mean, the parks were not empty when you were there because of the pass holder preview, I suspect. They were really drawing people in. But it sounds like
they were pretty packed.
Yeah, but it sounds like you were finding that you were getting, you know, fourth and even fifth or sixth fast passes when you were in the Magic Kingdom on a pretty regular basis.
Yeah. I'm not sure how that works. I mean, because they clearly weren't available earlier in the day, but later in the day, they just seemed like, I guess they had more capacity and they kept adding fast passes on, you know.
Could be.
I don't know how that worked.
Well, or you know what? The other thing that can happen is that people decide to change and go to a different park, and so they cancel what they had.
Yeah.
So that they can make a reservation someplace else.
That's true. That could be it. It just seemed like the later in the evening at the Magic Kingdom, we found more and more availability for things. It was weird.
Well, no, but that's a really good tip, though. I mean, what it does do is really emphasize that even if you don't notice availability later in the day when you're checking, you know, early on, it's still worthwhile to check back again, you know, even like, for example, if you were looking for something on Big Thunder Mountain, you know, as you were sitting down for lunch, right, and you didn't see something, it's probably worth it to check again later, maybe around dinner time, and see if something has opened up, especially on those nights when the park is open later.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so that's Magic Kingdom in a nutshell. Did you spend any time at all at Hollywood Studios on this trip?
What? Where?
I thought maybe you had gone to catch the show there one night, but I guess you were in heavy doses of Happily Ever After. So
actually, I wished I had instead of what happened to us at the other park that we're getting to.
Okay. Okay.
I wished I'd went to studios to catch a little Star Wars fireworks.
Yes. Well, let's go ahead and tell that Animal Kingdom story then first, because I know where you're headed with this. I remember when you were posting about it at the time. So Animal Kingdom is what you were kind of really there for. Now, I assume your son went with you to the park, even though because he's not an annual pass holder, he was not able to join you for the preview.
Yeah.
Okay. So you had a later in the day preview. What did you do with your morning in Animal Kingdom?
Okay. Well, we actually went to Animal Kingdom twice. When we set the parameters for our trip, Saturday through Wednesday, the first thing I looked for a fast pass for was Rivers of Light, because I knew it was a hard ticket to get. So right. Sunday night ended up being, which would have been our first full day, I was able to get Rivers of Light. So that morning we did Magic Kingdom early morning, no fast passes. We had all our fast passes for later in the day for Animal Kingdom. Okay. All that hedged around us getting the Rivers of Light. That was the only time during our stay that I could get Rivers of Light.
Okay. So you had to kind of build the whole trip around that show.
Yeah. So, you know, we had a good day, got a lot done at Magic Kingdom. I think we even swung through Epcot for just a brief food booth tour again. And then we proceeded on to Animal Kingdom and did our fast passes there, which ended in a fast pass at Rivers of Light, which never happened. We sat in that stadium for over an hour, and they finally announced, we're not going to be able to do our show tonight due to technical difficulties.
Oops.
Oops, yeah. So, you know, we make our way out through the angry mass of humanity, everybody. I mean, we sat there so long, the whole stadium was doing the wave back and forth, so trying to entertain ourselves.
Right. So basically everybody is kind of banded together and doing everything they can to try and keep themselves entertained until the show, you know, ostensibly they'll work out the issues and you'll get to see the show. Didn't so much happen.
No. I really don't know why they made us sit there that long. But, you know, I guess they probably thought it was something they could get fixed and just couldn't. But, aside from that, I mean, it was a good day, you know, and as we was leaving, I thought about stopping in at guest services, but there was already like what looked like 300 angry people waiting in line there. So we just decided to call it a night and go back to resort. And I had to stop by the guest services desk there anyway to get a new parking pass because of the split stay thing. They only issued me a parking pass for one day.
Right, right.
So I went in there and I just mentioned what had happened to us, and the cast member there, he was the lead there at the front desk there, and he says, well, let me see what I can do for you. So he ended up giving us five anywhere, anything fast passes.
Very nice.
That was pretty good. And then Animal Kingdom, since we didn't get, you know, our fast pass had got pretty much kicked out, they gave us anything anywhere fast pass, except it wouldn't work on Rivers of Light or Frozen.
So the places you really wanted it for, it wasn't going to help you with.
Yeah. Wasn't going to help me with.
Right.
The one the cast member, his name was Chris, All Star Sports. Thank you.
That's right. Shout out to Chris at All Star.
Yeah. He was good.
Okay. So Rivers of Light was a disappointment. Talk now about Pandora, because that's really what you were there for. You know, it was a preview. So as my understanding is that not everything was totally up and operating, but you were there later in the day. And a lot of people I've, heard from so far about Pandora had visits early on in the day. Were you there late enough that you were able to see, get some of the light up effect senses?
No, it was still full sun when I was there.
Still too light.
Everything was up and running.
Good, good.
So, it must have been the lowest crowd time I've, didn't seem to be hardly anybody in there with me. I mean, lots of empty paths.
So not what the videos have looked like this week.
That's right. it was, I did Facebook Live. I'm not sure how well those turned out. You followed along. Yeah. Got to see my nose for a long time because I didn't turn the camera around.
Yes, but, we appreciated the effort, though.
Yeah. It seemed to be doing okay on my end, but, it broke up a few times in the queue lines, but.
Yeah, I could just get into areas where the signal isn't so good and it drops out. But we appreciate the effort, and we did get to see a lot of the area. It looked like you did get to explore quite a bit. So maybe kind of talk about the things that you experienced in Pandora. And the first thing I wanted to ask you about is what you were just talking about there, and that was the paths. One of the things that I've heard said about Pandora is that it appears at least to be really intentionally built to kind of encourage wandering. Did you get that sense?
Yes. Yeah. There's no real signage except right at the entrance of the attraction to let you know that, this way is fast pass, this is standby, but there's no direct sign pointing you. Say, hey, Flight of Passage is over here. Hey, Navi River Journey is over here. There's no signs like that telling you what's here, what's there. You walk in the path from what used to be Camp Minnie Mickey.
Right. Right.
And you can see the floating mountains, but you have to walk pretty far into the land before you get the big reveal of, hey, I'm standing under floating mountains.
Yeah. All right. So.
It also looks like they're building a path that will go on to Africa. So there's another avenue to get in and out of there.
Yeah. I think they finally did open that. There's a bridge across on that side.
They had that kind of blocked off and a couple of ace cast members standing there. I talked to them a while and asked them if they had seen any Pandoran squirrels.
And?
No, okay. They said that the banshees had ate them all.
I can understand that. They get hungry.
I looked real hard for Pandoran squirrels, but I couldn't find any. Kind of figured I might find one, but.
So let's talk attractions. Did you get a chance to ride? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I did meet one interesting character, and I posted it up on Facebook. I got to meet the producer of the Avatar movies, Mr. John Landau. Got a nice little selfie of myself with him.
I saw that. Very cool. Very cool. Seems like a nice guy, too, hanging out and being really...
He seemed to be there with family. I think he's kind of been the guiding hand from the Avatar side of things. Working with Joe Rohde and all. So
yeah.
He was very nice, very cordial. Asked me where I was from, asked me if I was a Predators fan.
Right. Okay. So apparently he's a hockey fan as well.
Yeah.
So you had an encounter with John Lando. Let's talk attraction encounters though here for a minute. Okay. You got to preview both new attractions.
That's correct. You know, I was a little worried when I got my credentials to get in. I had a fast pass for Navi River Journey, and I was afraid that was the only thing I was going to get to experience.
Okay. I could see that concern.
Yeah. But no, I walk up, and as you're facing the mountains to the right, you will find the entrance to Flight of Passage. And to the left of the mountains, you'll find the entrance to the Navi River Journey. Just walk those directions toward the mountains, and you'll eventually find the entrance to those.
Right. I mean, they're designed for you to just kind of wander to them, and the paths will kind of, you know, diverge and come back, and they all lead the same place.
Yeah. So I did Flight of Passage first. Said there was a 15-minute standby line, so I take the long and winding path up the floating mountains, across a couple of bridges. People will be standing in line for a very long time there, but they have nice scenery to look at while they're there. I mean, they've done a great job with making you feel like you're in an otherworldly place, you know. Yeah. And eventually you wind your way into these caves with nice little Navi cave paintings about people flying on banshees, and you know, I guess it's the Navi rite of passage to fly on a banshee, and I guess that's what the story is being told by the cave paintings.
Okay.
And you wind your way through this long queue, and you finally start seeing structures that man has built into the caves, and you enter into a lab, and there's lots of different experiments going on there. No real people there operating the experiments, but you can tell they're, you know, there's notepads laying around, and
right. It's a lab. It's just not busy at the moment.
Yeah. And
hurry up and wait.
There's the big avatar floating in a tube, which is kind of creepy. I'm not sure how they have him suspended there, but and get the motions out of him. It's pretty neat effect though.
Yeah. And so you get through this queue really richly themed. It sounds like they've done a nice job of making sure people are kind of entertained on their way in. You actually get to the ride. Now there was a lot of buzz, especially during the previews, but a lot of buzz coming in about accessibility of this attraction, that people, not even necessarily people who were especially large, but maybe just who had particular body types or body shapes, were having difficulty with Flight of Passage. Did you notice any of that? And what was your sense of accessibility of the attraction?
As far as mobility accessibility, there was a floor where you would have complete ramp access to the ride. No steps involved. Other sections of the ride had steps you had to go up or down to get in and out of your level of the attraction.
Okay.
More or less.
Right.
I'd say there's 4 to 5 levels for the attraction, which we'll talk about, I guess, here a little bit. But there was a lower level where you could, you know, ride a scooter on down and no steps involved. So there is that part where that seems completely accessible. During my first ride, there was a person who was a little bit larger in the belly than I was, and they did have to work with their restraint to get them latched in properly, but they were able to ride the ride.
Okay. So it takes a little juggling. Now, the part of this is because this is a somewhat unusual ride vehicle. This isn't your typical, you know, people have heard that the attraction system is similar to Soarin', but, you know, it's not just sitting on a bench.
No, you are straddling a motorcycle-like looking seat, basically. And the restraint comes up behind you and latches in on your lumbar area of your back.
And then I've heard there's some issues kind of at your foot and calf level as well.
Yeah, there is some restraints that come in behind your calf, but I honestly did not feel those. They didn't touch mine.
Okay. Now, I've heard that you know, it can be an issue because it isn't even necessarily if people who have unusually large calves. Sometimes it is even just the fact that you've got larger feet because of the way the restraint closes. And so I've heard it recommended that for people who have bigger feet, that when you get on the attraction, it might be a good idea to kind of rest your feet on your tiptoes. So that when the restraint is trying to, trying to close, that your feet don't prevent it from closing properly.
Neither attraction, I rode the ride twice. Neither time did I notice anyone in my area being asked to leave because they couldn't get restrained. So. You know, The only empty seats were empty seats because there weren't enough people to fill that section of the attraction up.
Good to know. Good to hear.
So mine, I had 100%. So
excellent. And your sense, I mean, obviously we don't want to spoil the attraction, but, the non-spoiler review of Flights of Passage.
Oh, it's excellent. It is very, it's very much soaring on steroids, I guess you would say.
Okay.
With none of the visual effects that you get from the current edition of Soarin'.
So none of the artifacting from being off center or anything.
No. And instead of being, sort of lifted in front of the screen, like Soarin', you are, like I said, there are multiple levels. So you're already in position when you're in your seat, more or less.
Okay.
For the attraction. And the motion comes from the chamber you're in. You're in a chamber with eight other people, basically, but there are multiple chambers facing the same Soarin' screen, so to speak. So that's not too spoilery, I hope.
No, I don't think that's spoilery at all. And I think that's helpful because I think it helps people understand that, among the ways that I think that this particular attraction improved on the ride system it's based on is that it sounds like the way they've constructed these segments of seats, that there's less of an issue of, I know some people, get really bothered on Soarin' if they're on, in the middle level, for example, or on the lower level, that they see people's feet dangling above them and it's very distracting. And it sounds like the way they've constructed the vehicle and then the sections of Flight of Passage, that's not so much a problem.
No. The only way you would notice there's other people is to look around directly to the left or right or up or, up or down, depending on where you're positioned. If you actually take your focus away from the screen and look around, which I did because I was trying to figure out how the thing worked, I got a pretty good idea. So,
okay. So they're there, but you'd have to look for it.
And of course you're looking at a 3D image. So you've got some nice little, glasses on, and I mean it is high quality glasses and high quality visuals you're looking at. You're fully immersed in the flight.
Very nice.
And there is one section where you're flying over an ocean that is totally awesome. So
all right, so we'll remember to watch for that one. All right, so that's Flights of Passage, and then you have your Fast Pass for the Navi River journey. And I have to ask, once you saw the queue for Flights of Passage, were you at all disappointed that you were using Fast Pass to ride the river journey and therefore didn't really get a chance to explore the queue so much, or did you just go back to explore the queue later anyway?
Actually, when I walked up there, it said there was a 5-minute standby line, so I opted not to use a Fast Pass.
There you go. So I just walked the benefits of a pass holder preview.
Yes. So, and I was rolling camera as I was walking through this queue, and instead of walking up a path through the mountains in the lab, you're walking through kind of like a hut with lots of woven Na'vi elements in it, you know, beads here, nice woven roof. I mean, they must have spent all 7 years weaving this Q-line. That's what took them so long.
There you go.
But it was very artistic, I guess you would say, with the weaving and stuff in this cube. But, you know, I'm not sure people appreciate that as much as they do walking through the landscape of the floating mountains to get to the other attraction.
Very cool.
But I could tell there was a lot of work and detail went into that.
Right. And all of that, I think, bodes well for, you know, all this other work that they're doing in other places too. I mean, this kind of devotion to authenticity, and I think there's, you know, there was this kind of murmur of concern that all the projection technology that Disney had been investing in and been deploying in all these places might interfere with, you know, real, 3D kinetic effect in all this new construction they're doing. And it doesn't look like they've skimped on that at all.
No. I heard one podcast mention about Flight of Passage that was the best Universal attraction that Disney has ever done.
Okay.
That was pretty funny.
Yeah, I guess maybe they're talking about the issues with the restraints, and Universal has some pretty unpleasant restraints. I'm not looking forward to getting strapped into Rip Ride Rocket here sometime here in a couple of weeks. Because, I feel like I should be, you know, wearing my old catcher's equipment.
Okay, back to the River Journey. It is a boat ride, and your boat is very small. It looked like it held about, seemed like it was 2 to 3 rows.
Yeah, I think it's only 2 rows, so it's like it's 4 to 6 at most, I believe.
Yeah, yeah, very small boat, but you know, it is a very pleasant ride. I mean, intimate. Make it more intimate that you're in this tiny little boat floating down the river.
Yeah, I mean, it does make it more of a. It's an experience for you and your family as opposed to being, like the safari, right? Where you're in that safari vehicle with, you know, 2 dozen people. It's a more communal experience instead of a personal experience.
And, like I said, I walked through the queue and I got to ride the boat by myself because it was a walk on pretty much.
Oh, wow. So you got a solo ride.
So, got a solo ride. It is, you know, the focus of this, I guess, is the bioluminescence of Pandora, because it's basically nighttime on this ride.
Right. All the time. Right.
All the time. And there are lots of, you know, I've heard a lot of negative reviews of this. And the only thing negative I would say about it is that the use of screens, they work, except they seem to be too repetitive. I guess because I was by myself and there wasn't another boat in front of me, I saw the same scene, you know, from a distance several times before I got to it.
That's an interesting issue. I was in the front row.
Yeah. It seems like they were too repetitive. It seems like I need to change those up a bit, you know. Everybody's seen the YouTube or everybody that's not avoiding spoilers has seen the YouTube video.
Yeah.
The wolves walking, you know, the little baby wolves, and then the mama wolf comes along, and I think they're called viper wolves or something like that. Everybody's seen that scene. I saw it 3 times riding the boat before I actually got to the scene.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, and it just sounds like it's something that you know, in this case, is an issue during a preview because – the you know, because the crowd was so thinned out, and it might not be as much of an issue when the attraction's, you know, running at capacity and there are four people in every boat and you're getting some screening just from your, you know, other guests you're on the attraction with.
Yeah. But there's lots of uses of screens in this, but I think they work, other than the fact that I saw it repeat. Right. But there's lots of other things to look at going on above you. This is one attraction you look up a lot.
Okay.
There are the little spinning dragons from the movie. Mm-hmm. I don't know what they're called. And a couple of things where it looks like there's frogs jumping from leaves. You can just see the outline of them through the leaves.
Uh-huh. And so lots of little details to try and watch for.
Yeah. And then as you go through the music, and you can hear other things building up until you reach the climax, which is their super audio animatronic of the Shaman of Song. Vocals by Carl Finzel. I think they purposely picked somebody that couldn't really sing to make it, I guess it makes it more authentic that way, you know, that just kind of sounds like me trying to sing, I guess.
And, you know, he's not there to entertain you. He's a shaman. He's serving a purpose.
Yeah. But there's a point he makes eye contact with you and it kind of feels real, you know?
Sure.
That he's looking at you.
Yep. So if you had to compare the boat ride of, you know, River Journey to other boat ride attractions, what's it most similar to?
Most similar to, as far as length of time, it's not very long. So I would compare it most to the Frozen attraction. Okay. As far as time.
Right, because it's shorter.
Yeah, as far as, I mean, it's nothing like It's a Small World. It's not really like the Three Caballeros ride.
Yeah, and that's what I'm asking about, because those are the two comparisons that I hear most frequently, and I'm hearing from you. It's really not either of those, and it's not really like Frozen either, other than in terms of length.
I mean, as far as, I guess you could compare it to the Three Caballeros, right? Because it's a bunch of screens, and then you get audio animatronics at the end.
Okay. But it sounds like it's at another level, just because, I mean, look, the screens on Three Caballeros are on TVs. Right. I mean, they're obvious screens, right? There's no real attempt to hide that they're screens.
No, these things are built into the environment to extend the environment past, you know, what you're looking at. So,
right. So here's the big question then. You experience these things. I know that in the past you've been kind of wishy-washy about Animal Kingdom, you know, you kind of like it, but it's not a full day park for you and these things. Yeah. Are these new attractions in Pandora enough to make Animal Kingdom for you a full day park on a regular basis?
I think it could. They might keep you in line that long.
All right.
Animal Kingdom, you know, my biggest non-favorite park would be Hollywood Studios. But
right. And only until they finish Star Wars Land, right?
That's right.
All right, so let's talk about anything else in Pandora that you checked out. Did you explore any of the food or drink or stores?
Of course, Flight of Passage empties out into their main gift shop.
Right.
You can have a avatar made in your own image, pretty much like the Frozen in Carbonite thing they did with Han Solo.
Oh, okay.
They basically take a 3D image of your face and make your own personal avatar. Of course, they have t-shirts. They have little Navi tails you can buy and put on yourself. they have the big hot item is the you can buy your own Banshee. It's a little remote control Banshee that sits on your shoulder.
Okay. Does it fly?
No, it does not fly. It just sits on your shoulder and you can control it. Its motion. No,
got to be able to fly.
Kids are eating it up. You know, it's their own little pet Banshee that they get to walk around with it on their shoulder at tune of $50 a piece or something like that.
$250, not only does it need to fly, it needs to be able to fly and carry me.
Not $250. It's $50. It's like,
okay. $50 is a little better, but it still ought to be able to fly for $50.
Yeah. So that seemed to be the most popular one because there was a queue line to get in to buy your own Banshee.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And as low as the crowds were, there was a people lined up in that to get it.
Okay. Did you get into the restaurants at all or?
I went to the drink stand outside of, what's the restaurant's called Santui Canteen, and the drink stand is called Pongu Pongu.
Okay.
And I got the, I think it's called the Nightshade. It's a non-alcoholic kind of frozen beverage. That thing was the bomb.
So three thumbs up for the Nightshade, huh?
Yes, that was pretty good. For those that like alcohol, I hear the margarita there is pretty good. But
okay. Yeah, they got some interesting stuff going on there in the food and beverage area. I mean, a lot of it is just sort of, some of it is just plain odd, but it does look like there's some good options.
Yeah, Disney, it seems like the prices were reasonable.
Yeah, and I from what I saw of the menu, I liked that they were, you know, really making the effort, that they went with unique items and things that you're not going to be able to get elsewhere on the food and drink menus to really give people, first of all, to keep it immersive, but also to give people a reason to make those, you know, destination choices and not to just say, well, we just need to finish the attractions and we'll go, you know, eat somewhere else.
Yeah. The most interesting thing, I think, were the little pods they had. But I didn't need anything there. I did look at the menu, but really wasn't that hungry.
Sure.
But I was thirsty because it was hot.
Right. Florida. Well, so those things they call pods, they're basically, pretty much traditional Chinese buns. You know, it's Chinese street food that they sell these, you know, buns with things baked into them. It'll be interesting to see whether those catch on with guests. Because on the one hand, you know, they are classic street food, right? They're really easy to eat on the go. But they're a little bit different than people are used to. I mean, I guess in a lot of ways, it's just kind of a Chinese burrito.
Yeah. I'm not. I might have tried one if they'd had something besides cheeseburger.
Right, right. We made a little bit of fun of that on as part of the dining tournament talking about it.
Yeah.
You know, come on, you could do better than cheeseburger.
Cheeseburger. What's the other one? It was some type of vegetable bun or something. That and cheeseburger, that's your only options?
I think there was a vegetable one of some sort, which didn't look terribly appealing either.
No. I might have tried one if it would have been something besides cheeseburger.
Right. But let me ask you this. See, this is the thing. Some of it's just nomenclature. They called it cheeseburger. If they had called it beef and cheese, would it have been as off-putting?
Maybe not.
I mean, that's maybe the kind not. Of thing. I just wonder, because it's not really any different than a beef and cheese burrito, is it?
I guess the thing that scared me off is somebody said it was the essence of a McDonald's cheeseburger in a bun. Yeah. Huh. In a steam bun. And I'm like, I don't want a McDonald's cheeseburger.
Yeah, see, and that's the question, right? The question is, were they saying that derisively, or were they saying that in an effort to praise it because they're big fans of McDonald's cheeseburgers, and that was their way of saying, "Ooh, this is really cool."
Yeah, I think he had the disclaimer that was his guilty pleasure was McDonald's cheeseburgers. So,
yeah, so
I think he was giving it a high praise.
Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, just because somebody else likes McDonald's cheeseburgers and felt like that was satisfying that itch, it's a great question. I mean, I don't know how to analyze that kind of feedback, right?
Okay, I guess my biggest fear was McDonald's cheeseburgers have ketchup, and I am strongly averse to ketchup.
Okay. So, fair enough.
No ketchup for me.
So what about anything so else about Pandora that stood out?
I could tell by the looks of the pavement, or I don't guess you'd call it pavement. I think it was supposed to be dirt, but you could tell it was coated with some type of iridescent paint to make it look otherworldly. And I think that probably feeds into the nighttime effect of it glowing.
Right.
But until I see that in person, I'm not sure what that is, but it definitely had a pearlized look to it. The pathways. But I mean, there are many trails to walk around and under the mountains and explore. And I was too busy staring at it to realize, hey, Nathan, you've got this phone that can take pictures. So I didn't get as many pictures as I liked, but I think I picked a really good time because my window was 3 to 5 and they let me in at about 2:30.
Okay.
And I stayed until a little after 5. No, I guess it was right at 5 because when I walk out the exit and make my way back into Animal Kingdom, the queue line for people getting in for the next window was jam-packed.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't surprise me. My guess is that those later in the day times were especially popular because people are hoping to catch a view of, you know, the much-touted bioluminescence of the land.
Yeah. And I'd say they would hit I think 5 to 7 was the last window you could register, and this was the last day of the annual pass previews, too, so.
Yeah. Like that last chance.
That was the last chance, yeah. So, but I felt fortunate. You know, my main goal was to, you know, just get a view of the area, get the lay of the land, and experience both attractions. And I checked all the boxes off, you know.
Right, sure.
Seeing it at nighttime would have been great, but, you know, I scheduled it for when I thought I might be able to make it.
Right.
So,
all right.
It worked out well for me.
So anything about anything else about Pandora in particular, or really the trip in general that we haven't talked about that you think it's important that we touch on?
I guess this is Disney's first fully immersive land like that. You know, I mean, they do a good job of immersing you in a place, but you can see Tomorrowland and Fantasyland touch, you know, and things like that. You can see Frontierland from Liberty Square. When you're in Pandora, you can't see anything but Pandora.
Yeah.
Except for the path, you know, leading into it, you don't see any other part of Animal Kingdom. Yeah, you know, I made a joke about Pandora and squirrels, but I'm like, they have enough animal creature Pandoran noises. I think that keeps the earthly squirrels away. You know?
Yeah.
noises in the background going on. I'm pretty sure that's what's keeping the Pandoran squirrels away.
Right. Well, and that, you know, they made a real effort there to make it a different experience, right? They made a real effort to make those background noises. It's not background music like it is elsewhere in the park, right? It's nature noises more.
Yeah. It is a fully immersive experience, even more so than I haven't experienced Diagon Alley, but I have Hogsmeade. Uh-huh. And there's a section in Hogsmeade where you can see over into the Jurassic Park area.
Uh-huh.
You can see back into, I don't know what the other...
Lost Continent.
Yeah. You know, like I say, once you're in Pandora, you're in Pandora. You've been transported. So, right. And I couldn't see any evidence of a show building, you know. You had the man-made touches of the Santuli canteen, you know, and a couple of restrooms, you know, that look, you know, man-made. But that's not the show building. That they're serving a purpose. They were there when the Avatar movie, the
right.
You know, the army and stuff had bases there.
Yeah, so. they're well themed and they're integrated into the environment as, you know, abandoned buildings from the story.
Yeah.
All right.
So as far as, you know, they've done a good job there. I was thoroughly impressed with everything. I hope everybody else will be.
All right. So, go ahead. Sorry.
I don't know. You know, everybody, I was in the same bandwagon. I'm like, why Avatar? But you don't have to really know anything about the movie to enjoy this experience, you know, this area.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's a great way to put it. So let me just ask you this as kind of a wrap-up question. Somebody else who's thinking about taking a trip because, you know, their interest is piqued to check out something new, but it's short notice and they're concerned that, you know, doing a trip on short notice means, you know, not having that 60-day advance fast pass window and not having first choice of dining reservations and things. What's your maybe one or two pieces of advice about how to approach that kind of a trip so that they still have a positive experience out of it?
With regards to the whole trip or just like trying to experience?
Well, either way. I mean, just serious, you know, tips in general about approach or specific tips about something to do.
Okay. You know, this was a short notice trip and we were able to get pretty much the fast passes we wanted. Maybe not at the times we wanted, but, you know, like I said, the River's Light was my foundational thing and I was only able to find it one night. So I took what I could get. So take what you can get and build around that.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's a great point.
As far as experiencing Pandora, you know, chances are those fast passes are long gone. But if you could get one between the two attractions, I would take Flight of Passage because its queue line looks like it could be hours.
Okay.
Where the River Journey looks like it could eat people up pretty quick. As far as it's only a 4 or 5 minute boat ride. Although they're small boats, looks like it could keep on going pretty much like Pirates of the Caribbean kind of eats people up. It, you know, just kind of the boats are almost small and they don't stop that long because it doesn't take that long to load.
Sure. Well, because they're only loading two rows.
Yeah, they're only loading two rows. So it's kind of a omni mover with a brief stop.
Yeah.
You know, it just looks like it can keep flowing because my boat rolled up, I got in it, and it launched.
Well, yeah, you were one person, but.
Yeah, there's no restraints.
Right, right.
You know, so the, no safety check, so to speak, other right. than making sure you're seated.
Yeah. Yeah, no so boat surfing.
I think that line will move relatively fast as long as there's no technical glitches.
Right.
But mm-hmm. the Flight of Passage, that queue line, it is long, and it seemed to me that particular ride, there's two pre-shows to it, and it seems like loading it is the longest process of the...
Right, right. All right.
And that's probably to do with the size issues they've had restraining people. But
well, that and the restraint itself is a rather complex restraint system. It's not just, you know, take the belt on your right and insert it into the buckle on the left. I mean, it's a little more complicated than that.
Yeah.
If you want to check out the videos, they're still there on the Diz Dads podcast Facebook page, so you can check them out. I may go ahead and embed one of the better ones with this episode when we load it. Depends on whether Nate gets around to sending me some good pictures. Right, Nate?
Yeah, I'll get you some pictures.
All right. Look forward to talking to you again about the next one.
All right.
One little spark of inspiration is at the heart of all creation. Right at the start of everything that's new. One little spark lights up for you. Oh, hello there. So glad you could come along. I am the Dream Finder. Musical notes. What delightful melodies those will make. I love these flights of fancy, searching the countryside for sounds, colors, ideas, anything that sparks the imagination. A sunbeam, that's a good one. Everything that I can collect can inspire amazing and marvelous new ideas. And you never know what kind of figment you may come up with. Here's my favorite. Two tiny wings, eyes big and yellow, horns of a steer, but a lovable fella. From head to tail, he's royal purple pigment, and there, voila, you've got a figment of imagination.